everybody, and welcome to yet another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week I try to bring you exciting new guests to talk about various aspects in this very, very exciting field of UFOs and the Paranormal. It's a big umbrella, so I'm bringing on lots of different subjects. I hope you all enjoyed our guest last week. Michael J. Corey was our guest. He's a psychic medium, and we had a really wonderful conversation. It was very, very interesting, and if you want to check it out, the show is in the archives. But tonight, we're going in a little bit of a different direction. Now, I've done shows on earth changes before, and I've also done shows on government conspiracy, and even psychic children and this type of thing, but tonight we're going to mix it up and bring them all together with our new guest. Her name is Jacqueline Lloyd, that's L-L-O-Y-D, and she has written a really exciting new novel called The Thief of Sacred. I love that title. And we're going to be talking about, just all these different exciting subjects, such as the year 2012 and upcoming Earth changes, about how we can take back control of our government, and God knows we need to. And other very exciting subjects, such as the Indigo Children, which I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about the Indigo Children in the future, and I think they're going to play a very large part in our society in the upcoming years. And our guest tonight, Jacqueline Lloyd, is no slouch. She has devoted over two decades studying metaphysical philosophy, and her message is very simple. We must pay attention to what is happening around us and take back our power to change it. We tend to put power outside of ourselves for whatever reason. And, we could just accomplish much more if we stopped blaming others and took responsibility and power for our lives. And that is her message. And in addition to her work as a metaphysical teacher and author, Jacqueline is also a wife, a mother, an animal lover, an activist, a community activist, a political junkie, and a tireless crusader for families in need. And she actually has a ranch, which is a sanctuary for rescued horses and other animals. She has a degree in English and creative writing, and a lifelong obsession with politics and peace. And she is an expert on Indigo Children, which I'm very excited to talk about. And she has written, as I mentioned, a new book, which is called The Thief of Sacred. And she has a website as well. It's her name, www.jacquelinelloyd.com, all one word. So if you want to check out more about her, that would be the place to go. Now remember, this is a call-in show, folks, so if you want to call in and ask our guest a question, please feel free to do so. We'd love to hear from you. I'll give you the number now, and I'll mention it later on in the show, but grab your pen, because here is the number. It's 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494. But let's just get directly to the show, because we have so much to talk about. Jacqueline, thanks so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Preston, and thank you for providing this forum for all of us to share our thoughts and so we can explore this exciting time together. This is a really wonderful opportunity for all of us to do a tremendous amount of growth in the years before 2012, and it's just exciting that we can all be a part of each other's process.
Yeah, it is very exciting times to live in. It's like the Chinese proverb, I wish you a very interesting life, which, you know, means opportunities and obstacles are kind of the same thing.
Right,
in a lot of
right.
Ways.
I tend to think of the positive, though, because the growth that I see people doing in such a short amount of time, just it makes the negative kind of irrelevant, because the real key is what people are doing with the obstacles that they encounter.
Right. Well, that's a great way to look at it. I've always thought that's why we're here on Earth, basically, is to help grow. It's not just to suffer.
Right, and so, to enjoy life, and to live, and to enjoy living, because I really think that gets overlooked a lot in our day-to-day lives, and it's important to keep that in mind, too.
Right. Now, Jackie, your book, The Thief of Sacred, what a great title. Do you want to explain what the title means?
Actually, the title has a multi-layered meaning, and basically the book deals with the different ways that government functions and the ways that it gets hijacked by energies and people who don't always have the best interests of Americans at heart. And I wrote it before 9/11, and it had to do with Islamic terrorism in the United States. And of course, when 9/11 happened, it was on an editor's desk at in New York City, and they wouldn't talk to me after that because it was so eerily prescient, and the prophecies that were in the book did in fact come about. So I sort of went underground for a few years, and then when the tide started to turn and people started to ask questions about why we were at war with Iraq and what happened, and I decided it was time to go ahead and make my book available to people. So
well,
I self-published.
Well, yeah, I'm so glad you did, because, man, I mean, this is what we need to hear, I think. And
well, it's a double-edged sword, because the illusions that we find comfort in are often the things that we really have to face and get rid of, and that's painful. In my own life, I know. I often really don't want to let go of these sacred cows that keep me feeling safe and in control, but it's all an illusion, and it's got to go anyway, so.
Right. Oh,
and,
well.
And that's what natural disasters do for us, too, because it turns our entire world upside down in the blink of an eye, and all of a sudden, everything that we knew to be true and that we knew to have a solid ground to stand on is just gone. I mean, it's really a life-altering experience. It's really
right.
Amazing.
Right. That's one of the reasons, Jackie, I'm so excited to talk with you, because, you know, ever since I was a little kid, and I don't know why, I've just been obsessed with natural disasters, and I have every book on earthquakes, hurricanes,
really?
Tornadoes, and everything you can imagine. And what's really interesting now is it's all coming full circle, because, you know, I'm actually really into UFOs as well, and it turns out there is an Earth Changes theme in UFO accounts. A lot of people are being told about upcoming Earth Changes and warnings and things like that. Same with near-death experiences are being told messages by their spirit guides that we're in for some major changes, and pretty much right down the line, wherever you look for knowledge, people are saying that we're in for some real rough times. And what I find fascinating is the year 2012 is always mentioned, and I guess that comes from the Mayan calendar, is that correct?
That's correct. The Mayan, and actually the Hopi as well, had a very similar prophecy, and I'm told that the ancient Tibetan culture had one as well, dealing with 2012. I have not seen that or read that myself, but that's what I've been told.
Well, why 2012, do you think? I mean, that's not very far away.
I know. We have a lot of work to do, don't we? It has to do with the alignment of the solar system and the sun within the Milky Way galaxy, and the alignment of our galaxy in a greater cosmos. It's really an incredible thing to consider that we move through space, the solar system moves through space, and the Milky Way is moving through space, and we're coming into closer proximity with what I've always referred to as the God's Eye. They've now identified it scientifically. It's a cloud of, I believe they call it black matter, or dark matter, and it's in the middle of the galaxy, and it's what keeps our solar system spinning around the galaxy. And so as we reach a proximity to that, it is aligning with the sun, and that's why we're going to see more things impacting from the sun, solar radiation issues. And coincidentally, at the same time, as the magnetic field weakens, the solar storms are able to impact the Earth more directly. So it's all working together in a very interesting way. And, of course, interesting in the Chinese proverb term of the term interesting. The other thing that I wanted to mention, too, is I think it's really interesting that you've had an obsession, as you say, with natural disasters. Did you have any kind of a theme with that? Were you feeling that there was a particular path you wanted to pursue in relation to that, or?
I just feel like there are going to be major Earth changes, and it's going to change and end up changing the way we live. And I don't know, everything. I don't really have any particular theme. It's just the whole theme of survival has really gripped me strong, and I it won't let me go. And, you know, I have, it's interesting you talk about the California wildfires because, boy, I've been through those.
Have you really?
And what
was your experience with them?
It was amazing because I actually lived in Topanga Canyon, which is a very wooded area, lots of brush. And there was an enormous wildfire. I think this was back in the 70s, quite a while back. But I was at school in the San Fernando Valley at the time and saw the smoke coming up. And everyone's saying, you know, that looks around where you live. And I'm like, yeah, it does. And so the school bus actually ended us up taking us into the heart of the canyon, right into the fire.
Oh, wow.
And it was very, very dangerous. And my brother happened to find the school bus, pulled us off. We had a huge ordeal, and the fire ended up coming right up to our house, burned several houses around our house, and it just gave me a taste of, you know, to me that was just a tiny thing in a way, because I just feel like there's going to be so much more of this type of thing happening. And sure enough, you know, there was, and there continues to be these major fires, and I think that's just the tip of it. I mean, I'm expecting, you know, volcanic eruptions and earthquakes and tsunamis, and there's also all sorts of prophecies that the Mississippi will turn into a lake eventually in the center of the United States. And that seems to be happening. So, I don't know. I'm just really into this whole subject of disasters and what it means for humanity and how it's going to change our lives.
Well, I think that's a really good thing to be thinking about right now, because as you pointed out, it's definitely going to start happening more and more. And from my experience when I went through the fires, and in talking to people I've from Katrina, and you know, in the interviews I've been talking to people all over the country who've had their own experiences with natural disasters, not fire but other things, and I've noticed that it really brings people back to the basics, to the basics of community and people supporting each other. And it strips away all the trappings of life that we get caught up in, and all the baloney that, you know, that distracts us from really what we are supposed to be doing here on the planet, and how we're supposed to be a family. And it's amazing to see strangers helping strangers. I mean, you see it on the news all the time. People pull together after a natural disaster, and it does linger long after that. That there's a new appreciation for other people and for what humankind can go through if they pull together, and how they can make something happen. We had no water. We had, you know, I mean, it was a mess. And people
wow.
took care of other people's children, and massage therapists set up tables, and they were giving free massages to people who were waiting in FEMA lines, and therapists were donating their time to help the children through the disasters. I mean, it was beautiful. It was exactly what I hope we're heading for as a planet, if we can just make it on a bigger scale. And of course, every time there's a natural disaster, I think, well, this is probably happening, and maybe the people over there are also getting this feeling. And of course, there's a big backlash against the government that occurs as well, because as you probably know, the government drops the ball on the disaster survivors, and the aid is really not what it could be, and it makes people mad, because hey, it's our tax dollars, you know, and we need it when we lose everything in a single night. We need some assistance. We need support. We need loans. We need, you know, we need help. And it's just not coming. And it's really, it's an eye-opener for people who think the government is just going to take care of things.
Right. Well, look at the Hurricane Katrina as a perfect example.
Exactly.
It's still going on.
Years. Yep, it's been years, and they're still not on their feet. And it's I just see it over and over again. So I have to look at the positive and say, people are waking up. People are going to say, enough. This is not the way we need to do things. Let's do it this way. And if enough people say that, then we will see the change that we need.
Well, you know, our government, speaking of our government, you know, there's a lot of good things about our government, and I think there's a lot of freedom in the United States. But when it comes to the UFO situation, they've completely screwed us over. There's a cover-up. It's demonstrable. It's easy to prove.
Can you tell me a thumbnail sketch? Can you just give me a run-through of what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, well, since 1947, there's been a lot of UFO activity. And there was a crash of a UFO in New Mexico, the Roswell incident. It's very well known. And it was covered up. There's now over 200-300 witnesses. And really, there's conclusive proof of UFOs, not only in the public arena, but in private, because there's an enormous number of whistleblowers, government insiders, who are now coming out of the woodwork saying, yes, we do have the crashed flying saucers, yes, there is a cover-up, and part of the reason for the cover-up apparently is because the oil economy and because the technology that is being gained from these UFOs is basically free energy. And so what we have is that being covered up, which we really need it to save our environment. So here we have a government which could really change the world for the better easily. Well, you know, maybe not very easily, but could just easily let this technology out, and is not doing it. And we have a government that, you know, with a $1 trillion debt, and is not even helping ourselves. We're more intent on bombing other people than in helping our own country. So I think what your theme of taking back our power is so important, and I wondered if you could just talk a little bit more about what we can do to take back our power.
Well, again, it has to do with being very clear with yourself and others where your priorities are. And, you know, for myself, after I went through the fire, and I actually drove through flames with my 2-year-old in the car because there was no assistance anywhere. There were no fire trucks. We had no help. 911 told me to stay put. If I had actually listened, I would have died because the house burned down. You know, stuff like that. I'm very clear personally, very clear, and this is why I do these interviews and I talk to people, that it's not okay with me the way things are being run and the way money is allocated. We need to have the government serve the people, not the other way around. At this point, all our money is feeding this giant beast that's making these decisions that really don't benefit a lot of people. It benefits the few, the few with the power. And the interesting thing about the UFO part, I'm still learning a lot about that, and I'm trying to figure out how it all fits together. It's my understanding that the government has been in contact with UFOs for maybe 30 to 40 years. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Well, at least that long. Yeah.
Okay. And that they have an agreement with them.
That's controversial. You're pushing the edge of what we actually know to be true or not. But that, there are rumors.
Okay, interesting. Okay. I just want to know how the UFO thing fits together with 2012. That's sort of what my current, you know, wondering path is, because there's got to be a way that the UFO phenomenon ties into this shift in humanity and the shift in consciousness that we're seeing already begin, that is slated to complete at 2012 in December. And I'm wondering if it's a positive supportive force or if it's a force that would prefer to maintain the status quo with the oil-based economy.
Right. You know, it's interesting you say that, Jackie, because the UFOs could end the cover-up overnight by just putting on a major display. However, I think they're smart enough to not do that because that would cause a lot of pandemonium, I think, and being handed the answers too easily is not going to help us grow. But as far as 2012 and the UFO situation, what I'm thinking is going to happen, and this is just because of, I think, the pattern of UFO activity has been escalating for years. I mean, what started out with sightings has evolved into landings, and now we have people being reported being taken on board these craft, and that's been going on for 40 years at least, in large numbers. And now, I think the most recent, really prominent type of UFO activity that we're seeing is sightings over large city centers like Phoenix, or there was a recent sighting in Stephenville, Texas, seen by a lot of people. They're kind of like displays. And my feeling is that the UFOs, the ETs, who's ever piloting them, I think there's probably some good and some, you know, who have donor intentions. But I think that they're moving towards open officials disclosure. And I would think that by 2012, everyone on Earth is going to know that UFOs are real because they're going to be a permanent presence in our skies and on our planet. Now, I'm speculating, but, what does 2012 mean to you? I mean, what can we expect?
Well, I think it depends on humanity. I really believe that since we create a group reality, certainly we create our own reality, but then we also create a group reality. And I think it depends on how much people step up, how much power people take back, how much the individual gets clear with themselves about what they really want and what they really want the world to look like. If you have kids, you know, do you really want them to have a good education, or are you more concerned about a terrorist threat? It's that sort of thing. The more people become clear, one way or the other, wherever they are on the issue, I think it's going to evolve due to that and based on that. And I think the more people that refuse to deal with the issues, the worse it has to get. Because when people don't want to deal with issues and when they go into denial, then I've noticed things naturally escalate because they need to in order to accomplish the goal. Does
right.
that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
So I don't know exactly what it's going to look like. I mean, I've heard, of course, as have you, lots of different earth changes and continents falling into the ocean, and I don't really think it's going to be that bad. I am concerned about volcanoes. The ones that concern me, of course, are the super volcanoes, the ones that can basically turn the planet upside down and make it nighttime for months on end. The super volcanoes that aren't recorded in history are usually linked to large-scale extinctions because of the impact on the global weather patterns and the fact that sunlight just simply does not reach the Earth's surface for long periods of time. And we have no way to predict one of those, but if they were to actually occur, I think that would be a big deal.
Yeah, you know, and I'm expecting more disasters. I mean, certainly we're going to the poles appear to be melting, the pole caps.
Right. And I'm understanding, too, that will somehow affect the rotation of the Earth. Is that true, or is that speculation?
Well, that's what I was going to mention is one of the, I guess, speculations about 2012 is that the Earth will tip on its axis, which, you know, has happened in the past.
Right. They do have scientific evidence that the poles have flipped polarity. The controversy, however, lies in the magnetic poles versus the physical poles, because they have evidence that the magnetic poles have flipped in the past. North becomes
right.
South, south becomes north. But whether that actually causes the physical planet to flip or move on its axis, there's a lot of controversy. But there was that case of the mammoth in Siberia that died with grass in its stomach that they found perfectly frozen. So they have certain clues like that lead me to believe that it could be a physical Earth shift as well as polar, magnetic polar.
Right. I heard all sorts of wild theories. I mean, an ice age coming, mass extinction by, you know, basically the secret government trying to assassinate the population through plagues and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
So
actually,
God knows what's going
to...
Right. God knows, you know, what's going to happen, but I do think that it's important that people wake up to the fact that there is a lot of this stuff going on. I mean, a good example is Who Killed the Electric Car. I don't know if you've heard of that, but the technology to, stop people from burning oil was suppressed, and very heavily, and is only now coming out.
Oh, interesting. No, I hadn't heard that. Well, I know in our area, the electricity company bought a giant solar manufacturing plant and just shut it down because they said it wasn't efficient. So they're basically buying up the competition and shutting it down. So
see,
I'm not surprised.
Terrible.
Yeah,
this is a good example of how we can take back our power and, you know, start using solar energy and just, you know, do it ourselves.
Right. Yeah, I have solar grids, too. It just seemed like the right thing to do after we were without power for 3.5 weeks.
Wow.
After the fire, yeah. The other thing about 2012 that I would also like to maybe just throw out is that we have a lot of help. We have a lot of help. The Indigo Children, for example, is just one aspect of that help. They have come in with a heightened sensitivity and a heightened awareness and wisdom of what society needs to shift into in order to survive and thrive after all the dust settles. And if we can listen to the children and support them in their uniqueness and in their differences, because they really, at this point, they feel like a round peg in a square hole because society as a whole and the schooling system has a hard time dealing with them. You know, so we medicate them and we take away their power in various ways besides drugging them. And they are really a key to pulling through this, because they are built differently. They're wired differently. Physically, they're different. They have a heightened sensitivity to chemicals and preservatives that affect them emotionally. Everything is fine-tuned in a way that I can't even imagine. And I see these kids, and I work with them, and the main thing that they have come to teach us is an acceptance of others and a love for the earth and for animals and for each other. And I would like to support them in any way I can. And, of course, I do everything that I have thought of at this point. But up to 2012, I think if somebody who was listening would like to do something to support change in a positive way, if they can help with the kids, that would be a wonderful thing, because the kids are really a component that get lost when people start talking about natural disasters and earth changes, because they have been given to us as a key to survival. I really believe that.
Right. Oh, I totally agree. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and tonight our guest is Jacqueline Lloyd, author of the new book, The Thief of Sacred. Now, Jacqueline, do you want to tell people your website or where they can get a hold of your book?
It's available on Amazon.com. As I said, it was slated to be published traditionally, but when 9/11 happened and some of the parallels were just too much for the publishing world, they rejected it. And so I have self-published it, and it is available on Amazon. And what I like about that is that I didn't have to compromise. I could just put all my research in there and everything that led me up to the point where I realized what was going to happen. And it's all in the book. It's all right there in black and white. And I also demonstrate how integrity and how connectedness to what really matters can make the difference in a person. It's in thriller form, so it's actually a good read, and it's fast paced, and it moves, and it's exciting. But you're also you're also being educated at the same time, because I did a lot of research. I talked to people in government. I talked to retired military folks. I talked to just about anybody I could get my hands on who could help me understand the different processes and the different forces at work that built up to 9/11, and also how that it really set the stage for 2012 in a lot of ways, too, because after 9/11, things got really intense. The government stepped up what it's doing, and we started realizing what was going on. And, of course, it's been a gradual process over the years. But I think if it weren't for 9/11, I don't think we would have made this much progress as we have, because I think seeing that in such stark reality has allowed, you know, the Patriot Act and taking away people's freedoms and stuff like that has really allowed people to start thinking about what truly is important, and that's the freedom that this country was founded on.
Right. Well, that's literally a trial by fire. You know, I think it's one of the most fascinating things about your book is that it, you know, basically is predictive. And I was wondering, you know, do you think that's a lot of writers, whether they know it or not, are kind of channeling higher forces and are very psychic, I think, and intuitive. But you also did all this enormous amount of research, so it's fascinating how those two came together, I guess.
They really did, and it amazed me, too. And as I was writing it, I it would shock me what would come out. No way, that happens? And it was an adventure from the start to finish, and that's probably why people say, wow, I never saw that coming. Well, that's because I didn't either. But it really did come from somewhere else, some higher force, you know, beings, whatever, that wanted this information to come out, and so there it is.
Right. So you think this era in our history is particularly more significant than, say, you know, another era? Are we in, like, for a huge transformation? Is that
I think so. I think it's a make or break sort of a thing, do or die. Honestly, it'll probably get worse before it gets better. In a lot of ways, in a lot of respects, the sides will become more polarized, and forces of opposition will become stronger on both sides, and the light will become stronger and the darkness will become stronger, and that's just the way of this planet. It is a planet of opposite polarities. And I think the main thing to keep in mind, too, is that we do, I said, we do have a lot of help, and it's not just it's not just the children. It's, we also have a lot of really, really amazing people right now in the physical on this planet who are doing their part. And you're one of them, of course. And people who are willing to stand up and say, "Hey, let's talk about this, and let's put things together, and let's see what happens." And I think that's great. People like you just make me so happy, because nothing upsets me more than someone who's just like, you know, they don't want to deal with it, they don't want to talk about it, they just want to just stay stuck where they are.
Right. Oh no, I think we're, you know, people may not like disasters. Who does? But the truth is, you know, what's happening is, in my opinion, the Earth is trying to wake us up into a better way of living. So I'm pretty optimistic overall about the outcome, even though I think it might involve some really big changes. And I think it's interesting to use the phrase "final exams" for humanity. So you think we're finally growing up? And I mean, are you optimistic about what our future then?
No,
would you say?
Yeah, I'm optimistic. I do think it's final exams. I do think it's a do or die situation, though, because I don't think it could really get to the point where we could just continue in a status quo any longer. It seems to me that wheels have been set in motion, and they actually started, I would say, a couple of years ago. It was almost like somebody closed the door on the airplane, and now we've taxied and we're taking off, and wherever we go, we go. There's no getting off this train. It's it has a feeling of inevitability, and I think it's fabulous. I'm excited. I think it's a wonderful thing. And the more people that we can connect to and bring them around to the positive side of it and the supportive side and supporting each other in our processes, however that looks like, is really going to be the key to survival. And the other thing that I find very interesting is that the current movement that we see in societies around the world toward a fundamentalist religion, be it Christianity or be it Islam or the Jewish religion or and Hindu or anything, a lot of those belief systems include a belief in a Messiah and that someone is going to come and save them. And the problem with that is that, you know, first of all, it may not happen, okay, but that's beside the point. It seems to give people the okay not to do the work. It seems to say, no, you don't have to work at this. You don't have to try to make the world a better place, because you're going to be lifted off the planet in one way or shape, or somebody's going to come and fix it. Don't worry about it. Everything's going to be fine. So often when I get groups of people together and I try to find out how we can all unite toward a positive common goal, I run into that, and I run into this block of, no, I don't want to do that because it's bad, and that means the Savior is coming. So there's almost a subconscious investment in things getting bad, because they're forcing the Messiah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think you're right. People are basically giving their energy away, their personal power.
Right.
A way I look at it. And I know religion is still very popular, but me personally, I would call myself deeply spiritual before I would call myself religious. And but that's just me. Because I don't want to give away my power. And I think that, you know, God helps those who help themselves, to be cliche about it.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, that's great. I feel the same way. And the more people can really tap into that, and they can do it from a point of fundamentalism or religion. It doesn't matter. It's just getting past that initial block of, no, we want it to be bad because that means the end is near. And it's a subtle thing, and I think it's largely subconscious, but I see it a lot in leaders especially, and that's when I get really nervous, because if, you know, leaders of countries are making decisions based on a belief system that includes somebody who's going to come and make it all okay, that's just not going to be helpful.
Right, yeah, I've heard rumors that that's what the current administration believes, but I don't know, gosh, I don't know, we're definitely in for some changes there with this whole... I mean, this election is typical of how we're dealing with some very volatile times and new things. I mean, we've never had a black candidate or a woman candidate seriously for president. So I think it's really exciting what's happening now. And,
it is.
But the Indigo Children, now let's talk a little bit about that, because I just find this whole subject really fascinating. Now, Indigo Children are different from normal children? Is everyone being born now an Indigo Child, and how do you tell? And
well, the term Indigo, of course, refers to the auric color. Somebody realized that the children predominantly had an Indigo color in their auras. Personally prefer the term children of the 21st century because it just works better for me. So the Indigo Children or the children of the 21st century, by and large, I would say 80 to 90% of them that I'm seeing now have these different abilities and this amazing connectedness that I think only a few of us had back in the day. I don't know how old you are, Preston, but certainly
43.
When I was younger. 43? Okay. I'm 40. So when I was younger, the ones who were extra connected or extra tuned in were really the oddity. They were kind of not really accepted by the group, or they struggled with themselves and how they fit into the other kids and the framework of school and that sort of a thing. So now what I'm seeing is that the children are certainly a lot more uniform in their differences. So they have similarities in how they process information and how they process food, for example. The food is critical with Indigo kids. And
oh, really?
It is so important because the preservatives mess with their body and then their minds and their emotions. And part of the ADHD, I believe, has to do with the preservatives that they're being fed. And coincidentally, the companies that make the preservatives also make the drugs for controlling behavior. So they're sort of in a win-win situation as far as I can tell. It's really up to, again, parents and people who are in positions of power and authority to really look at what we're doing with these kids and see, okay, they think differently, they process information differently, they react differently to stimuli, they're much more sensitive, they go into overload a lot faster, and when they go into overload, they act out. So what the reactions that we're seeing are actually caused by the environment that they're in, the physical environment and the emotional environment. Often the parents don't know what to do, and, you know, I'm a parent, believe me, I'm not flawless. I know I'm doing things wrong, and it's so hard when your child is seen as the one that's causing the problem or the one that's got the issues or the one that needs all the help, and the teachers are worried, and they're saying he's disruptive, and it's very hard to get quiet in yourself and say, okay, what's really going on here? What is the best for my child? But that's really what we have to do, and I think as more and more of these children filter into positions of jobs and if they reach their 20s, I think we're really going to start to see a shift. It's just going to take a little time.
All right. So society is, like, right now viewing it as a problem when, in fact, you're saying it's a gift.
It is, absolutely. And it's a gift that has been, these children have been prophesied for thousands of years that they would be coming in with these incredible gifts and these talents and this sensitivity to everything and the lovingness that they have, and they would be the ones that would help us as a society make this shift. And this has been talked about for thousands of years. So now that they're here, I find it very interesting that the reaction is to, it's sort of horrified. No, you can't do that. You have to do things the way we did it. Well, you know, maybe we didn't do it all that great, and maybe we have to rethink the whole system because maybe it's time.
Right. You know, it's interesting because the Indigo Children is a strong theme in the UFO field as well, because apparently,
oh, really?
And a lot of people, you know, who are experiencers are having these really incredible children who are often called Indigo Children, who are very, very psychic. They're way more vegetarians than, you know, the average person. These children are turning into vegetarians. I mean, isn't that interesting?
Oh,
and
great.
Just, they're smarter. They're, you know, what we used to learn in school. Now these kids are picking it up a lot quicker.
That's and, true.
But I find most fascinating is, you know, their psychic abilities, I guess. It seems to me we're seeing an increase in that. And I think Uri Geller did a whole, he was one who first started to explore that, about how all these children are being born being able to do spoon bending and, you know, telekinesis, I guess you'd call it, and things like this. So well, is that part of the Indigo Children?
Oh, absolutely. But all that is just a heightened sensitivity. Psychic powers, all it means is that you're just sensitive and you're picking up on stuff that you can't see, feel, hear, or touch, or taste. So it absolutely goes in line with what I'm saying about how these children are coming in more sensitive. And the sensitivity, of course, is what's going to allow us to craft a society that is a lot more forgiving and a lot more compassionate than the one we have now. Because when people are sensitive, they obviously feel empathic towards other people, or they're more aware of what's painful or what needs assistance or what needs attention or what needs, an influx of money, for example. So the fact that they're psychic doesn't surprise me at all. And I really hope that society as a whole can continue this path of greater acceptance of these gifts, because when we shut down, when you have a child that's that sensitive and that gifted, and they get the message that it's not okay to be that way, that shuts down a very, very core part of them, and it takes a lot of work to unlock that again. And usually the result is depression and drug use, and of course we're seeing that a lot in teenagers, and I'm not surprised, because that is a direct result of the suppression and the depression that occurs as a result of the suppression.
Wow. Well, so what can we do? I mean, what can society do in general and specifically to become, more connected to these children and help them and treat them the way they should be treated?
Well, I think everybody carries in their heart a plan. I think everybody came with a plan and came with a way to support this evolution, like your radio show, for example. This is an expression of your heart. I mean, it really is. And the more people that follow their heart and express their heart, be it in writing children's books or putting on puppet shows or spending time reading to kids in the library or any number of different ways, however they feel called to assist, I think is going to be the best way, because not only is it natural and it'll come from the heart, but it is part of the divine plan, because I think, God has a plan for us, and they sent people like you, and they sent people all over who are really just taking a deep breath and saying, no, this is what I want to do, this is following the heart, and so what? I'm just going to do it, and if people think I'm crazy, whatever, if I lose my job, okay. They're just doing it because deep down they know it's the right thing to do, and I think the closer we get to 2012, the more intense that uncomfortableness will become if people are not following their heart. I think it's a blessing. It's uncomfortable at best, and sometimes it manifests in a really chaotic way, as failed marriages or radical change of job or lifestyle. But ultimately, I think it's a blessing, because then we really learn who we are and what we're here to do. And the more people who honor that in themselves, and the more people who can stay connected to that idea that they're not just random people floating around, that we all are connected, we all have a plan, and we all need to do our part, I think the better everything is going to go. And I really believe that the more people who support the divine shift that we're going through, the less drastic the earth changes have to be.
Right. That's another theory I've heard about this 2012 and upcoming earth changes, is that there is going to be a divine shift to the point where the veil, the so-called veil between the worlds, is going to become much thinner or dissolve completely, so that we'll be able to basically ascend, and I don't know what this means, to the fourth dimension, but I would imagine it means an awakening of psychic abilities, and we're definitely seeing that all across the board, really. So.
Yeah, well, the veil thinning has actually already started. I don't know if you've noticed it in the past, I would say, 1 to 2 years. It seems like time has been speeding up. Have you noticed that? In terms of manifesting, people are creating what they're thinking a lot faster. There used to be a longer delay between the thought and the intent and the actual physical manifestation. Now it's happening a lot faster. People are saying, I just thought I wanted to get a new job, and I thought it'd be fun to work in advertising, and I opened the paper, and there was an ad for it, and I got the job. I mean, it's just happening faster and faster, and that's all an indication of the veil thinning. As for the ascending part of it, ascending, it, to my understanding, of course, it's just me, but to my understanding, it simply means that we have healed the illusion of separation and that we have returned home, which is to the conscious recognition that we are all connected at to not only on the planet, but to the entire creative universe and to God, which, of course, is the entire, you know, universe and more. So that would also tie into the UFOs in some way, because if we get to the point where we're accepting of the idea that that we are connected, then we won't be as scared of the idea that there are other beings off planet or that there are other civilizations out there. I think it is only scary when we feel isolated and we feel separated from God and from each other. I think once we make the shift to embracing society, embracing ourselves particularly and each other, I think UFOs, it would be like, oh, great, you know, okay, join the party. All right, we're one huge galactic family. That's awesome. You know, we won't have that resistance and that fear because there won't be, it just won't be there.
Right. Well, these are really exciting times. It looks like we're in for the major shift of, you know, it's, you know, that's a very popular theme in UFOs is that they're all visiting here because something really monumental is going to happen. And maybe, I mean, maybe it is this 2012 thing, and maybe that's what all the, I mean, the Bible prophecies, you know, the rapture and the coming of Jesus and all of that is tying in together with these earth changes, which is, everything seems to be just coming to a head right now.
So it does. Isn't it exciting?
It really, really is.
And I think the original text on that, by the way, just as an aside, the original text on the second coming was actually having to do more with the consciousness that the Jesus or Jeshua held when he was here on the planet. It's the Christ of consciousness. It's the energy of unconditional love. That was what he demonstrated. That was what he taught. And that was what he ultimately died for. So it's not so much the original interpretation of, and the original message was that it's not the being, the physical man who is going to return, but it's actually the energy of unconditional love and a oneness with all life and God that is going to return. And I think we're already starting to see it. And so you're right, it is all falling together in a really cool way.
Right. I just hope, the disasters don't, that we don't need such bad disasters to come together in love, a lot of the population will be killed, because that's another thing that kind of scares me a little bit, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, it really bothers me too. Honestly, it really does. The only thing I can offer to that is just in the natural disaster, the only reason I lived was because I stayed in the moment. I really did my best to stay connected to my heart and to what was going on in the moment. And it's a survival thing, but your brain kind of shuts down. You don't think, you just do. It's a really neat thing. It's almost like the power of now. And Tolle's talking about just being in the moment where the mind stops its chatter. So the more we can practice being in the now and being aware and being connected and not being afraid, the more apt we are to survive just about anything that comes our way. Because, again, the natural disasters, I don't feel like it's some random force just ripping through.
No, it's not.
It feels deliberate. It feels like it has a plan. Whatever damage it does is deliberate. You know, I really believe that. And it's designed to maximize growth. So,
right. Oh, Jackie, you know what I've been doing recently is actually, I've got a ton of books on all these natural disasters and people who've survived, every type of disaster you can think of. And I reread them, of course, because each time you reread a book, you get more out of it. And I was stunned to find that pretty much in every single book, there's psychic happenings. You know, these disasters are being foretold by precognition. People are being rescued by angels. People are becoming connected to God. And in every disaster, the Titanic had the sinking of the Titanic involved over 50 instances of precognition. And really strong proved. So I think there's an interesting aspect to this natural disasters in that they, like you said, there is meaning to them. And there is a strange paranormal aspect to it that I think a lot of people don't realize.
it's true. They almost have their own consciousness, whatever it is, be it a fire or a wave or the earth, of course, earthquakes. It is possible to tune into the energy of the event and receive information, you know, oh, I need to move here, oh, I need to go there, I need to get this. It's pretty amazing when it works. And unfortunately, for the most part, we have to be at the point of absolute terror to be able to get to that point of connectedness, because it's pretty much everything else has gone away. There's no logic to be had, there's no reason to be had, nothing works except this connectedness, and it's amazing how it works. And I've heard, like you said, I've heard a lot of people talk about it. It's not just me. It is very powerful, and it's a beautiful thing. So there, of course, there's a good thing there too to be had.
And well, living in the moment, meditating, all of this, I think, are good things. And, you know, there was an interesting experience I had. You know, I growing up, I was pretty skeptical of all this stuff, but had a series of events, including, you know, my mom's death and a major publicized UFO sighting and other things that woke me up. And when that happened, I started having, you know, meditating and doing all sort of research, and I started having lots of psychic experiences. And there was one that just comes to my mind, which is interesting, which I woke up here in my condo and ran out onto my balcony in my underwear at like 5 in the morning thinking, what am I doing? You know, this is just something you don't normally do. I've never done it before or since. And no sooner had I got out there when a big earthquake struck. And
wow.
I somehow felt it coming. I don't know, but it was a psychic event, and which was, again, connected to this natural disaster thing, which is connected to, you know, the earth changes. It's all connected. It's very interesting.
It is all connected, and we are, of course, all connected. So it makes sense that everything else would be connected, because we are one great expression of God's love for humanity. So it's just in the human mind is where it gets a little funny. Well, that's great. So did stuff fall on your bed?
No, it didn't. But, you know, some stuff fell in the house. It wasn't a huge, huge one. It was pretty far away, actually. But it was, you know, it was a 5-pointer, which is nothing in California.
but
you know, Jackie, our time is pretty much up. So, God, I want to thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I love connecting with people like you. Thank you. This was wonderful.
So do you have any last messages you want to give people, you know, mention
I'll
your book again or your website?
I'll tell a quick parable. A long, long time ago, a teacher asked his master, he said, "Master, what is the meaning of life?" And the master said, "Life is to be lived." So that's it.
I love it. All right. Well, thank you, Jackie.
Thank you. Enjoy your journey.
Thank you, you too. Well, everyone, that's our show for tonight. I hope you've enjoyed it. Our guest has been Jacqueline Lloyd, author of The Thief of Sacred, which you can go and order on Amazon.com. It's been a very interesting conversation. I hope you enjoyed it. I guess that's it for tonight. Hope you can join us next week when we have on another exciting guest. Until then, have a great evening and a wonderful week.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.